Coaches, athletes, weekend warriors. Have you thought about recovery or regeneration? Today we oftentimes think in training about the stimulus we put on our body and the workload that we do to fatigue us daily. But we don't give enough to the recovery component. Simply Faster has numerous options to enhance your recovery in between the sessions of work that you put your body through daily. They have Theraguns, Normatic regeneration kits, and they're all cost-effective options. My athletes at my high school often use the Theragun in between intervals, race days, and training sessions. In the world we live in, it's hard to guarantee that we're going to get a doctor's visit. Simply Faster provides you the option where you don't have to be behind a paywall to get the care that you need with the equipment that they provide. So get yourself the regeneration and recovery that you need and level up. Simply Faster. Check it out.
So, speed endurance, people get this wrong because they hear speed endurance and they think it should be something that's like an endurance type workout. The speed is in front of the endurance. So that should show you that it needs to be fast. So when we talk about speed endurance, we're just talking about the ability to hold speed for a while. We're wanting them to be enduring over a long distance in speed. Now, one of the coolest things we figured out as coaches is that racing just below or just above the race distance has the highest correlation to improved sports performance over that distance. It's not the actual distance itself. So if you had a kid running 200 meters in practice versus having them run a 150 or a 250, that wouldn't be as effective as running the 150 or the 250. Why do you think that is? Why is it that the actual race distance doesn't correlate as well as just a little bit below or a little bit above? Why do you think that is?
The 150 you can go faster, and the 250 you're getting more endurance in.
Yeah, so there's you're pretty specific in what you're doing. You're slightly overloading or you're slightly underloading. So there's something to be said for that. That's one. The other thing is the mental aspect. Are they ever going to run as fast in practice as they're going to be able to run in a meet? No way. Right? The brain has a governor, just like a car does. The brain makes negotiations with you all the time, whether you're aware of it or not. And it's going to hold back a little bit. It's never going to give you the same adrenaline pump as competition does. It just doesn't. Okay? It just doesn't. It doesn't create that alarm. And so a kid running a slower time in practice might screw with their head a little bit. Like, I suck. You know, I only ran 22.7 today, coach, in practice. It's like, yeah, but Billy, you run 21.40. That's pretty good for a practice. Ah, I suck. You know, so that's one of the reasons why. Okay, so how do we do this? We use this as a race model for the 200. So they actually come out of the blocks, and those first set of cones is where we want them to drive to. Then the second set of cones is where we want them to transition to upright running mechanics. Then we have them run tight and tall, around the curve, okay? And then when they get to here, where you have the relay exchange zone, I set up cones to tell them, this is where you float to the outside of the lane. We don't want them to do it all at once. We want them to take advantage of that centripetal force as it's coming off the curve. So we want them to float out to the outside and slingshot off the curve. And so when that cone starts, we want them to slowly but surely flow through that exchange zone from the inside of the curve to the outside of the curve. We teach that. Then, when we get to the 100 meter mark, we have them A run, which is that exaggerated high knee sprint, all the way down the last 50, forcing them to open up their stride and take advantage of that momentum that they built when they're coming off the curve. Now with these, we provide huge breaks. We have them come out of blocks, and I use a starter's position. This is a race model. I'm trying to simulate what they would do in an actual race. Okay? And Coach Rodriguez is talking about when he said I use this race, that's the race model that he was talking about. He actually had that on film. He tweeted that out last year. This is awesome. It's fun. It's a great thing to do on a Saturday when you don't have a meet because it kind of simulates a meet and you provide them huge recoveries in between. And it's kind of cool because if you're trying to get, like, let's say 30 kids through this, you know, by the time that 30 kids gets through, you're pretty close to being ready to go again. You know? So that works really well. It's a great, great, great work. Okay. Here, but here's my philosophy on this. Okay, there's two types. There's an intensive and an extensive. Intensive, the percentage of effort is very high. It's 85% short, incomplete recovery. Why? Not that it's going to make you a better sprinter. Don't get it twisted. It doesn't make you a better sprinter in the race, necessarily. But what it does do is it improves the body's ability to buffer waste. That's what you're trying to improve when you're going at 85% with short recovery on long interval. Okay? You're trying to improve the body's ability to waste. So when you get around that curve, and basically what happens is once you hit 44 seconds, your body loses the ability to buffer that waste. If you're given a maximum effort at 44 seconds, the body starts to lose the ability to buffer. If you do this type of workout, it gives the ability for the body to buffer for a little bit longer, which now means you can get close to finishing the race without being extremely uncomfortable, right? The other thing that it does is it buffers that waste faster at that day. So when you're done with that competition after running the 400, the waste is getting out of there faster, which then allows for you to replicate many reps in a meet. So if you're a jumper, well, you might have to jump 6 times, right? And you gotta think of all your warm-ups and cool-downs and all that stuff, and then it allows that to be buffered very fast. Now this is what you would do if you're running a 200 and a 400. If you're not running the 200 or 400, you're more of a short sprinter, a Tony Hollick type of, you know, guy, short to short, then you would do your 70% effort. Okay? And with the 70% effort, what you're going to do, okay, is you're going to be able to still maintain decent running mechanics. You're not going to exhaust the athlete. And instead of being a buffering, it's a restorative action. So what it does is it gets the blood pumping, and it heals up the tissue on the day after a major practice or competition, and it allows for that recovery to be improved. It also gives your athlete another opportunity to run with decent running mechanics, so they're not doing this, right? Because they're able to still maintain their running mechanics. And with this, you can do a larger volume of it. So if you've got like a sprinter who also needs to lose a little bit of weight or whatever, that helps. Lays down those capillary beds, and it's a good thing to do on a high-low system. So high intensity Monday, low intensity Tuesday. High intensity Wednesday, low intensity Thursday. Race on Friday or Saturday, right? And so that's a good workout to blend between harder workouts. If you are trying to get people in shape and they're training for a really long time and you want to keep things interesting, one of the things we might do in between our runs, we might do push-ups, crab walks, goofy little things, so you can slide in some core work and some fun stuff in between to keep things interesting, to challenge them. I wouldn't suggest doing that as you move towards the end of the season, because you do want to have some recovery, but that's something fun to do in the meat of the season or really early on when we're trying to get athletes in shape. Everybody might be doing the same thing, distance runners, sprinters, jumpers, and so that's something fun to do. We found a lot of value in that, and it's tough, and they'll build up waste, but it gets stuff done, and you can build up some good general strength in between the workout, giving them something to do. So not everybody likes to do special endurance, okay? People have different attitudes about how to handle this. I do this with people who run the 200, 400, and 800. You have to. If you don't do this type of training for a 400 kid, they won't be as fast as they can be. That's a fact. Again, because you want to go just below, be just above the distance. So if that kid's truly, their best event is the 400, you're going to have to do stuff like this. Now, what's also interesting is if you think about fiber types, most of us have a good mix of aerobic and sprint fibers. You don't typically have all of one or nothing, and they wouldn't be a sprinter if they have all endurance fibers. Let's just get it out there, right? But most of us have a mix of both, speed and endurance. So you have to do a little bit of this. So what do? Sometimes a kid might not like to run a 450. They hear a 450, they freak out. But you tell them 40 to 45 seconds, and they don't freak out as much. And then the goal is, it's competitive. Warrior mentality. Let's see how far you can get in 40 to 45 seconds. And then what you do is you put their name on a cone, and you put their cone on the track, and they're always constantly trying to get farther and farther with that cone. That's a way to hyperdrive a kid who might not give you the effort over the actual distance. They might only be able to cover 350 meters, but yet now you know that's what they're going to cover. But if you told them 350 versus telling them we're going to overtime you, yeah, it changes things, right? And what do I mean by overtime? So let's say like their best time at 400 is 48 seconds. I got it. Okay, so pretty good 400 for a high school kid. Now you might have them run for 53 straight seconds, and then see how far they get. So that's how you do it. You can do split runs with the longer sprinters. You can do that. One of the things I like to do is go under with a 350 race model, and then they'll drop their run. They come over. They throw on a weighted vest. We wait for like 2 minutes, and then I have them run a 50-meter sprint. Now, why do I do that? That's obviously not something they're going to do in a competition. Why would I throw the vest on them and have them sprint 50 after they just ran a 350? That's exactly right. You're trying to simulate what they're doing without having to totally make them do it. And again, you're playing with their brain. You gotta do what I call psychological ninjutsu on them all the time, right? And so it's a way to still get that task done, to make that simulate what they're going to go through in a race for them to see it. But maybe they're not ready to do it just yet, and you've got to figure out ways to blend them into doing it. And so that's the way we do it all the time. So you've got typical workouts that you see, and again, you'll notice huge recoveries between these workouts, because these are exhaustive if you don't do these. And this is not something you do with a 100-meter specialist. This is the only type of workouts you do for a 2, 400, or an 800 kid that's speed-oriented. Yeah, Coach.
Do you have a certain amount of meters that you try to hit with your specific athlete today and not go over?
So I don't have the chart up with me, but basically USATF gave suggestions of volumes for these types of workouts, right? Mm-hmm. And usually when I start the season, I start with the smallest volume, and as I move to the middle of the season, I work the highest amount of volume, and then I work down to the smallest one again. So I always talk about my seasons are chubby in the middle, like me, you know? So in the middle, you're going to do your most volume or most intensity. At the beginning, it's going to be minimum effective dose. Get to whatever they can handle, their maximum effective dose, which is different for each athlete and their age. And then we go back to a minimum effective dose again. That's kind of how I handle it, you know? And again, it really is athlete dependent. Some kids need more, some kids need less. So, all right, after